League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Coming up on this episode of Belief Hole.
The cool thing about this concept is it's new, and because it's invisible, there's a lot of theories out there as to what this could be. And I think it's easy to imagine that it's not all one thing.
Yeah.
You could have just something that's cloaked. It doesn't mean it's all Bigfoot. It's all an alien invasion.
There's a ton of invisible beings in our world.
Absolutely.
A ton.
It looks like a humanoid figure that is kind of translucent. You can see through it, but there's some kind of field distortion. Another consistent thing with all these experiences is that you can generally make out the outline of the entity.
Right.
I mean, I think that there's a number of things that could explain this, and, you know,
None of it normal.
You can't really talk about the cloaking in the woods without bringing in some of those radical Bigfoot stories.
Now you've introduced this dangerous idea of the trans-dimensional Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
There are stories like people going into the woods disappearing, but there's blood found on the trees, almost like they've been pushed through like some sort of like transient point.
We cover crazy far out there stuff, and this seems like definitely one of those.
Especially when you attach Glimmer Man to it.
Right, and we're talking about cloaking technology.
Cloaking seemed possible to me, though.
Exactly. Right. There's several different competing industries right now with different sorts of cloaking techniques.
That's just what we know about.
The point is that there are these giant creatures that he's photographed in our atmosphere hovering around sensitive areas. Military bases, experimental research labs.
Where they hang out is a place you're not supposed to be.
Wouldn't you if you're invisible? Like, that's where you'd go.
Maybe.
Wouldn't you go to all the places you couldn't go?
Yeah. That wouldn't be military bases, though.
Well, you're not an amoebic life form that exists transdimensionally, John. You're a strong young male. I know where you'd go.
Yeah, you do. Where would you go? What would you want to find out?
I might keep that to myself.
No, I want to know.
I would definitely go to Bohemian Grove. I'd definitely be there every summer.
Yeah, some sort of Bilderberg meeting.
Bilderberg meeting? That would be fun. Free cocktails, and you get to learn about the masterminding of society.
Conspiracy.
Synchronicity.
Sasquatch.
Homunculus.
Alien races.
Satanism in Hollywood.
MK Ultra.
Tartaria.
There's like a whole... I've been watching this one guy that...
Close the door, it.
Jury!
Close your door!
What's the,
Inner Earth. Disagreements.
Ghost Dad.
I like that movie.
Dogman.
Bohemian Grove.
Corey Feldman.
Magicians are demons.
Spectres and spirits.
Sleep paralysis.
Strange disappearances.
Sky whale phenomena.
Yes!
Alternative history.
Shadow people.
Shh, quiet, I'm trying to say words with the mouth.
It's getting dicey out there.
Poltergeists.
That's cool.
Anunnaki.
What is the moon?
Elf towers. I would never talk about it. That's old.
Y2K.
Cover-ups.
Apocalyptic catastrophe.
Vampire.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, hello.
How are you in this beautiful fall afternoon?
It's beautiful out there. Are you asking me or the audience?
Maybe both.
Well, I can answer for me.
Go ahead.
I'm doing okay.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You forgot your headphones.
I did. Thanks for bringing that up right at the beginning.
Yeah, we had to delay the recording.
It's all my fault. It's terrible. I feel like there was a gremlin getting back in here. So you listeners out there may not know, we worked extra hard.
We got ahead an episode.
Yeah, we worked extra hard to get ahead for the last episode. So we were able to travel the last couple weeks or week and a half. And I feel like since we've been back, at least today, there's been a bit of a podcast gremlin.
It's just because you don't have your stuff probably organized again yet.
Yeah.
That's always a weird feeling coming back from a trip and like, the first 2 days I was back, it was like everything was just all over the place. And I was like, I don't know how to put it back together.
How was this before?
I was so tired. You know, I drove by myself for 2 days and it was like 21 hours.
Yeah. Long drive.
And then it all hit me after I got back, like a day after. It was just like my body hurt.
Yeah.
And just laid around.
We were talking about how it doesn't feel sometimes like it's the same existence.
Yeah, right.
Because you were visiting a place you lived before too. Mm-hmm. So it's like you went back
weirder.
In time.
Anytime you take a trip and you come back, it's just like, it's weird because you're in a completely new universe almost.
Yeah. I feel like especially when you're gone, when you're somewhere else for like more than a few days. We were gone for like a couple weeks.
A week and a half, 2 weeks.
Then you're there enough time where you're like, did I ever leave Texas? And you forget.
Yeah, that was weird. It was very surreal. It was so much a part of my life and your guys's too.
Yeah.
So when you're there, you're like, did I ever leave?
Is this all a dream when I was back in Ohio with a podcast?
Is there a me here that exists? What, like, you know, that idea that you splinter off?
Mm-hmm. It did feel like parallel reality.
Yeah. Well, you know, we had that doppelganger experience, which we won't talk about today.
But one day we'll talk about that.
I saw a freaking doppelganger of my twin brother in the same room.
Dude, I'd had that happen to me once too.
What? I've told you the story before. You've never said that.
You have?
Yeah. I told you the story like a couple times.
Maybe it just didn't. It was weird, dude. I almost had a heart attack.
Were you at a grocery store?
No. You know what a doppelganger is, right?
Yeah, it's a duplicate of someone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a duplicate of myself.
Well, that's bizarre. Yeah. You saw in person?
Yes. It was so crazy, dude. It was in London, Ontario when I was going to school and there was this bar. And it was like the club type thing. And this guy was like way at the end of the club. And I was me, dude. And I was like, what? Like, I was like, am I dead? And my heart was beating really
fast.
No way.
Like, you're actually.
Yeah, dude. I was like having a panic attack because it was like his mannerisms. I got, you know, when I was about 10, 15 feet away, it wasn't me, obviously. But for a long, like, walking up there, I was like,
you actually were pretty convinced then, apparently.
I mean, I couldn't accept it in my brain because the mannerisms and everything, the way he was talking, the way he was moving, I was like, that's me.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Were you pretty drunk at that point? Or were you?
No.
Huh.
No. I mean, it was right when I got there.
That's interesting. Yeah.
You take any kind of stimulants to make your heart panic?
No, it was just like I thought I was in the Twilight Zone, or I thought I was dead.
There is no Twilight Zone. You know that, right? That's just a TV show.
You know, I would like to posit this though. What if someone was there to take your place? A shapeshifter, perhaps. And then once you were approaching, he shifted just enough so that's you enough. Would be like, oh, that's not really
Baron
my doppelganger.
Throat John just hanging out of the club, waiting to shift into weird. You. Anyway, well, that gets us awkwardly into our topic
for
today. It was your glimmer man.
That doesn't make sense at all, but
no, not really. But
yeah, it does.
Clones might glimmer before they, you know, become visible.
Well, he did after that. He disappeared and turned into like dust.
I disbelieved that last part of the story.
That was the weird part.
Yeah.
You know, it was weird enough looking like me, but the disappearance
right,
part.
Right, that would be a little more bizarre.
Yeah. And the dust part, that's...
I got all over myself.
Big part of the story. Should have led with that. So just for you guys know, this episode is going to focus on the Glimmer Man phenomena.
I'm sure a lot of people wouldn't even have heard about this.
Right. Well, if you Google Glimmer Man, you're mostly going to get the smash hit Glimmer Man with Steven Seagal from 1996.
It's a little hard to do research on it.
Yeah.
Really?
We had to dig to get really good stuff.
Co-starring Keenan Ivory Wayans, which if you haven't seen recently, please, it's worth a revisit.
It's one of the
worst movies of all time. It is.
Did you watch some
so
of it?
Amazingly bad. Yeah, I just watched some clips just to get some like reference, you know? And there's this one scene at the end, it's like the final fight scene, and Steven Seagal is like, I can't even describe it, but the way he is hitting these guys, he's like literally doing this, like, his
like
hands are just kind of moving. It's like how, yeah, but barely moving his hands away from his body. And the other guy's just like, oh. it's ridiculous.
It's great 90s action subpar movie.
He was a good fighter though.
I guess, but he was just the way it was shot was so bad.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And the jokes are awful, but it's fun to watch.
He was a good fighter.
He was. And I like the Wayans bros.
I'll tell you what. Yeah. I'm going to flip you over.
He has this smile where he's like he's one of those guys that like is acting way cooler than he really is. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he's always been that way.
Yeah, but he has that, you know, I guess it's kind of awesome to be like that, kind of just like, I'm awesome even if you're not.
I think he, for like on a side time, like he goes out and...
Oh yeah, I think I have heard that a lot. Like he's actually a really good martial artist.
And, yeah, and he goes out and like hunts bad guys in for real.
He had that show where he was a
joined the cops.
Yeah, but he did that before.
I mean, like it was a reality TV show.
Yeah, but he had been doing that for a long time.
Well, like and as a vigilante?
Yes.
Dude, there needs to be a movie about that. Like Steven Seagal, like biopic, where that's like, it's the hidden life.
Anyway, Glimmer Man, which by the way, not in love with that name. Uh-huh. Sounds like, I mean, I get it. This happens all the time with this kind of stuff. You know, like Lizard Man. It's like, it's an easy thing to throw.
It sounds like a comic book movie by Marvel.
Right. Well, apparently it's a Steven Seagal film. But yeah, I feel like it should have a different name, but this is how these things go. Like Lizard Man, Frog Man, Goat Man. The easy thing to throw on there, but the weird thing about it is Glimmer, you think of like glitzy. I think if anything, you're going to name it with a man after, it should be like Shimmer Man.
Well, I was saying that too, but if you think about the Steven Seagal film,
it wasn't because he was, you know, wearing a lot of bling and was glistening. He glimmered because he was so fast with his hands.
That's
his
true.
Fists. So makes sense.
No more bringing up the Steven Seagal movie.
Give us a description. Okay. So yeah, if you don't like the name, there's other ways to describe this thing. There's not kind of a, I think it's kind of a newer phenomenon as far as it coming into the mainstream, that there are several different ways to search this term. And if you want to look for some stories, and we're going to go through some today, some pretty interesting stories, you can search predator-like entity, because that's one of the major things that people say when they see this thing is, like, I saw Predator later, and I was like, holy crap, this is exactly what I saw, because it has that shimmery kind of translucent field distortion
like,
look
like
to it.
Almost like it's cloaked.
Like it's cloaked, exactly. That's another thing. Cloaked entities is another one. Actually, I had a whole list of them.
Will you make the Predator sound?
Oh. Wait.
That's pretty close.
Oh, that's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
I did it better than that one episode that we did. Oh, and this came up, Missing 411, when we did that episode,
yeah.
Because I think that kickstarted this whole thing, was Missing 411. You remember that episode, John, with the hunter in the tree? I don't know if you're going to touch
like
on that story.
The grassy plane?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah, we'll get into that for sure. The cool thing about this concept is it's new, and because it's invisible, there's a lot of theories out there as to what this could be. And I think it's easy to imagine that it's not all one thing. Like,
oh,
I think you could have just something that's cloaked. It doesn't mean it's all
that's
a Bigfoot. It's all, alien invasion.
There's a ton of invisible beings in our world.
Absolutely.
A ton.
ITEs, man. Invisible terrestrial entities.
Yes, and this is going to come in later. This is fascinating. There's actually been recent, it's controversial, obviously, but recent technological development with using different kinds of lenses through telescopes to pick up invisible terrestrial entities on this planet.
What?
We'll get to it.
Who's doing this?
An Italian physicist.
Well, it's his research firm.
Yes.
Yes, it is.
But he headed it.
So they can see invisible things?
This is literally the last thing on my notes, but I could just jump to it right now. On page 10, I found this when searching for invisible entities and was really surprised to find in the American Journal of Modern Physics. In 2016, a paper was published called Apparent Detection Via New Telescopes with Concave Lenses of Otherwise Invisible Terrestrial Entities.
Otherwise invisible?
Yeah. In other words, we can't see them except using this kind of lens.
So are they new species that we've never heard of?
Yeah, we've never seen them before. They're basically...
It seems like this would be a bigger story if it was real.
Well, this goes back... This is from 2016, and you know, it's controversial, obviously, but when we did our episode on sky creatures, remember that? That's exactly what this is describing, it sounds like to me. From the images I've seen, they're not like a specific kind of shape. They're more amorphous. Like they can be in different kind of configurations, but they're massive too. And I think they've seen them in space, but definitely over, like one of the points in the article is about their concern for discovering these things hovering or
snooping.
They're doing snooping a lot of snooping around like sensitive areas in the United States. Or I guess other places around the world, because that's an Italian
military
group.
Bases,
oh,
experimental research labs, that sort of stuff.
Where they hang out is by places you're not supposed to be.
Wouldn't you, if you're invisible? Like, that's where you'd go.
Maybe.
I mean, wouldn't you go to all the places you couldn't go?
Yeah. I wouldn't be at military bases, though.
That's true.
Well, you're not an amoebic life form that exists transdimensionally, John.
You're not a sky whale,
You're
John.
A strong young male, so I know where you'd go.
Yeah, you do.
I do. Anyways, I might play a clip from them later. Santilli is his name. He developed this telescope and initially was to discover antimatter in the solar system or in the galaxy, deep space, essentially. But he said just like Galileo's telescope was intended to look into deep space, it was primarily
applied to terrestrial use as far as like looking at things in our atmosphere
or
things,
across the land.
Right.
Yeah, and he said it, just like that or similar in that use case, his telescope ended up being useful for that when he pointed it in our atmosphere. And he started discovering these objects that are like, you know, either expelling what he calls dark matter or...
Not dark matter, because it would cause massive
or dark
explosions.
Energy, right?
Light. Dark matter, light. It's complicated.
It's complicated, yeah. But the point is that there are these giant creatures that he's photographed in our atmosphere. And he's a former MIT Harvard grad. He's done a lot of work with his company and his telescope. But we'll play a clip from him later. It's really interesting and we'll have the stuff in the show notes.
Yeah, it's controversial for sure. We'll see where we get into it. It doesn't quite apply to the beginning of the stuff, which is the Glimmer Man concept, right?
Right. We want to get into the spooky with Halloween. So we're going to talk about the things that might be existing around you at all times, the invisible entities, the humanoid entities. What are they doing there? Where do they come from?
Unknown motives.
And it's kind of a new phenomenon, so we thought it'd be fun to look into it.
Look into it.
Yeah, and not really new phenomenon, but new, newly discussed. And there's been reports of this
becoming
for a long
more
time.
And more like
it's
mainstream.
Become a category. It's become recognized as, oh, there's a pattern here with these right. sorts of things.
Let's talk about some of the descriptors.
Yeah, let's get into it.
Yeah, so some of the ways to describe this thing are, like we said, it has that kind of, if you've seen the film Predator, it has that look where generally people that experience this, it looks like a humanoid type figure, usually, that is kind of translucent and you can see through it, but there's some kind of field distortion where you know you're seeing something that's kind of obstructing it. And another consistent thing with all these experiences is that you can generally make out the outline
right.
of the entity, whether that's where it's wrapping around the figure, this kind of field distortion, whatever it is. There's this kind of outline that exists. That you can,
like that's, Predator.
Like Predator, and so, but it's very slight. Like you'd have mm-hmm. to be focused on it to see it. And we'll hear that in some of these stories
yeah.
coming up.
Almost like the look of gas when you see
yes.
it on the
yes.
heat.
Yes, someone describes it like that, but they say that it's not like gas because gas ebbs and flows. The only difference is it's similar to gas like heat waves, except there's that defined structure, that right. outline of the humanoid
yeah.
shape.
So terms like that are used a lot. Terms like cellophane, terms like plastic wrap, those sorts of things, you know, so you can kind of imagine what that's like. And the weird thing is a lot of these things are seen, oddly seen, you know, with the structure around in trees, tops of trees. That's like one of the common places.
Yeah, which is weird.
Weird.
Not ladies' locker rooms.
Yeah.
Not shame.
Other interesting other interesting attribute is the clicking. Yeah, that's one of the things that made me initially like, I mean, the reports were this clicking. At first, I would, you know, think like, well, this is obviously, you know, someone saw Predator. I mean, what are the chances it's going to be a semi-transparent being that's in the woods and it's clicking, making a clicking
right,
noise?
Climbing trees.
But some of these clicking reports come from well before the film was released. Now, that's interesting. Was the film inspired by these
stories? I tried to look into that, but all I could find were things about the inspiration of the design of Predator.
I kind of doubt it because those stories would have been so rare back then to be inspired yeah. by these stories and then make the film.
It could be one of those consciousness things where you absorb... you know, the information that's just out there in the ether. Like there is this thing that exists. You
right.
imagine this because it is real somewhere.
But
you know?
I think it's really just slowly seeding us with information about the reality of invisible alien entities.
I don't think
probably
that's
the
true.
Most likely thing. But do you remember the movie Signs with Shyamalan?
Yes.
Shyamalan?
In that they had cloaking, right? Especially the scene towards the end and the sound that they would make.
That's
like
true.
A clicking. It was
that's
like a
true.
Predator kind of sound, but they didn't look anything like the Predator.
Yeah.
But they had those two attributes.
Incredible
so
movie.
I think it's a slow disclosure.
I think that's a reach.
I don't think they're aliens, but
probably what it is.
I think that they're here.
They've been here the entire time.
I think they're from lost tribes from ancient man.
I like that idea. Well, before we go more into the theories of explaining what these things might be, should we get into some of the accounts?
Let's have a story.
Yay!
So this first story, Chris, you've selected this, have you not?
Yeah. Yes.
Yep.
So this is one story you will come across. I feel like it would be good to do because this has been one of the most popular stories when it comes to sort of an invisible entity. And I find her storytelling pretty credible. This comes from 10 Sans Shoes on Reddit.
Reddit. Okay.
Basically, like the lead up to this is she was looking for something to
explain
what she had experienced and came across this Reddit thread.
Right.
And then felt like she needed to reach out. To,
right.
Know,
that's an important
else.
Point. A lot of these stories, you know, they're not like, hey guys, I got a Glimmer Man story.
Right.
They're like, hey, then they post in some random thread of like unexplained phenomena. Like, hey, I experienced this. I just want to know if anyone else has experienced this. And it'll describe this kind of Glimmer Man or, you know, translucent creature. And someone will be like, oh, yeah, post that in the, that goes in the Glimmer Man.
Right.
And,
but so. I think this is important to do because yes, it is on Reddit, but it ties into stories we're going to do later on that are resourced with real researchers, with, you know, a
names,
book I'm holding
dates,
in my hand,
right.
a magazine I have here with, so it ties right into that, which I think gives it more validity. And I think it's an important one to do.
Right. And they have the elements of consistency that make them these stories. Okay, go ahead.
When I was about 5 years old, I was playing by the edge of the woods behind my grandmother's house. I played there often, and my grandma just kept an eye on me from the kitchen or living room because the house had huge windows that faced the woods. She would come out every once in a while just to see what I was up to. I was obsessed with digging in the dirt and collecting unusual rocks and arrowheads that littered the land where my grandmother lived. This is Midwest Illinois, not too far from Cahokia Mounds. So finding arrowheads was actually not that uncommon. Anyway, that day I remember picking out a spot to dig. I had been out there for quite a while because I remember I had a pretty decent sized hole going when something caught my eye up in the tree that I was next to. I almost don't know how to explain it, but it looked like almost a heat wave coming off the branch of the tree. It was fall. I remember this because I had my pink jacket on and remember thinking that my mom was going to be pissed because I had dirt around the bottom of the arms from digging. I also remember there being a lot of leaves on the ground. Anyway, I'm staring at this heat wave and realize it has a human shape. So here I am, 5 years old, and wondering why there is an invisible man in the tree. I remember feeling scared but unsure of what to do. Then it started moving and making a faint clicking sound. There it is again. This is about the time that I decided that I was not supposed to be seeing this, and I hightailed it back to the house. My grandmother saw I was pretty shaken, and I remember telling her that I had just seen an angel. In my 5-year-old mind, I didn't know what else it could be. I had never heard of aliens or ghosts or monsters, so to me, it had to be an angel because that's all my little mind could think of.
I think that little nugget there definitely makes it more credible, and at least in my mind. It sounds like a recollection of a child because the whole, you know, labeling it as an angel, because there was no other sort of relationship she could grab onto as far as what sort of thing that could be.
Yeah, at that age, if you grew up in a Christian or religious household where there are angels talked about, that's what you're going to call it. And parents probably aren't talking to you about ghosts. Well, I guess they would. I mean, you know, maybe, but well, in a fun way, but like a white sheet, not like invisible thing that can, you know, grab you.
If you're in Iceland, you might think it was a elf.
Right, you know, hidden folk or something.
Yeah, but then again, this is kind of interesting. Years later, in 2004, now at this point, she has 3 kids. And she's living out on the edges of this wilderness area in the same town. And she's just kind of getting settled into this new place when she has another encounter years later.
One night I was up late doing laundry after the kids went to bed. I decided to take a smoke break before I went to sleep. I am back there on the porch and I started hearing this faint clicking sound. I immediately looked to the ditch because I had seen a groundhog out there a few days before and thought perhaps he was out there again. The yard was faintly lit from the outside light by the playground that is to the right of my back porch. I didn't turn on my porch light. I didn't normally, if I was just going out for a quick smoke. I didn't see any groundhog or movement from the ditch, so I go back to smoking my cigarette. The faint clicking sound keeps happening, and a slight shift of movement makes me look up into the tree to the left of my porch. It's there. The same invisible thing I had seen when I was 5. It is like a distortion and in a humanoid shape. It is crouched down on the branch with an arm out holding onto the trunk of the tree. I couldn't believe it. I was like, is this happening? Has it come to kill because I saw it all those years ago? All I could think about was my kids in the apartment sleeping. I ran in and slammed and locked the door. I ran to the kids' rooms and made sure all the windows were locked. Then I just turned out the lights in the living room and stared through the blinds at the tree to see if I could catch another glimpse of it. I sat there for about a good 10 minutes and couldn't see anything. I began to think that I was just tired and my mind was playing tricks on me. Just as I was finally talking myself down, my neighbor's dog comes running across the yard and starts barking at the tree at the same branch that I had seen this thing. This dog had never barked at anything. The barking went on for a few minutes until I heard the neighbor lady call her dog back inside. The dog reluctantly turned to go back home, stopping every few feet to look at the branch of the tree until he was out of my sight. I didn't sleep that night and have never seen anything like it again.
Yeah, the whole thing about it crouching down and seeming to be looking at the person, like it's been caught red-handed. Like there's a lot of that aspect in these stories.
So much when it's seen. It seems like the point of these things, maybe, if it is a cloaking technology or whatever it is, if it's human or entity, it seems like the point is to observe because so often when they look at the thing, they realize it's observing them.
Right.
It's frozen. It's trying not to be seen. And then it like rushes out. That's kind of a similar kind of theme.
Thinking about it more, like we've covered this phenomenon quite a few times on the show, like randomly.
Not thinking it was a kind of a common phenomenon.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of stories that we've done where it kind of has this... You know, even including the Duncan story.
So exactly. Yeah. Justin had that story. What episode was that on? Was that?
That was a bit more terrifying, granted.
Yeah. That was a Halloween episode from last year. We'll link it in the show notes. Maybe we'll drop a clip from it. But
and that's one of the reasons I wanted to do this one. And then because you're exactly right. Like that story, ties right into what I'm going to be getting into later. And I know everybody listening out there, I know this is, we cover crazy far out there stuff. And this seems like definitely one of those.
Especially when you attach Glimmer Man to it.
Right. That yeah. name onto it. And we're talking about cloaking technology. There's a lot of.
Cloaking seemed possible to me.
Well, though. And that's it the is. Thing. We're going to get to this. We're going to talk a little bit about, we are on the brink. And
yeah. already happening.
That's just what we know about.
Exactly. Right. And not just in one way are we on the brink. There's several different competing industries right yeah. now, companies with different sorts of cloaking techniques.
Right. It seems very possible at this point.
There's one actually, and I'll play a video clip for you, John, at least at some point. There's a clip of one specific technology that looks identical to what's being described here. Right now, it's not something you can wear, but it is set somewhere, and anything you put behind it, it's almost like the cellophane sort of, you know, but it's technology that allows you to bend light around an object.
Mm-hmm.
So to the human eye, it's virtually invisible.
But the weird thing is about this story, though, it's like, if it is cloaking technology, it seems like, you know, there's nothing going on there in just a neighborhood. Like, what?
I think right. that, I mean, to my mind, this would be like, do you know where this was? I've grabbed a few different reports from different places, and a lot of these seem to congregate in different areas. Like Washington is a big area, Washington State. And I don't know if there's military involvement here, if there are military bases nearby some of these locations, but I definitely think that a lot of these could be explained as deep secret technology the military or special forces or even like covert groups are using and testing out.
Yeah.
I remember a story, John, you and I swear we heard this on Project Camelot like a decade ago about this like invisible thing seen in the desert. It had like glowing red eyes, and the person thought that it was an invisible super soldier or something that was testing out, you know, field activities in the desert.
But I mean, it's not that far of a stretch if you think like there's black projects out there that are decades more advanced in certain areas and industry than the regular person gets to enjoy, the regular civilian. Then it's not at all far out of the realm's possibility that since right now we are publicly on the verge.
Exactly. Way beyond.
And as far as like why be there? Why be in these sort of mundane residential areas?
It looks testing. I mean, it's a perfect place to do it.
I also like the concept, and I've heard this come up in different places, from some high up people, the idea that it might be that there are things that are around us all the time in regular places for who knows what purposes, but surrounding us all the time. And it kind of reminds me of that Are You Afraid of the Dark episode. I think we talked about it at the beginning of this show.
Right.
But let me read a quick quote here from Fortean Times. It's really short. And this synchronistically came when we got back from Texas. And I was like, I wonder if there's something in here that relates. And
immediately
I find invisible aliens.
Mm.
So this is from the August edition of Fortean Times. Dr. Helen Sharman, the first British astronaut in space, insists that extraterrestrials not only exist, but may be living among us. Quote, there are so many billions of stars out there that there must be all sorts of forms of life, said the chemist, now 56, who in 1991 spent 8 days at the Mir space station. She warned that aliens may be so different from us that we wouldn't recognize them. Quote, will they be like you and me, made up of carbon and nitrogen? Maybe not. It's possible they're here right now and we can't see them, she said.
Yeah, personally, my feeling is that there's no reason to think that what people are witnessing are extraterrestrial. Even the ones those large amoebic type things living in the atmosphere, there's no reason to suggest that these are extraterrestrial. They're just invisible to us, but they've been here all along.
Yeah, that's definitely possible too.
That's the truth.
But you think they're organic?
Yeah. I mean, I do. I think that the...
Like creatures and not like, you know, technology?
Technology. I mean, I think that technology can be used. I think some of these creatures we see, like I've read some interesting research and I'd like to do Sky Wills or Sky Creatures episode 2 at some point.
That's maybe.
Right? maybe a little too much. But the cloaking technology, there's plasma cloaking technology that they're working on. And from early research into these kind of the living sky stuff with these amoebic-like entities is that they are plasma-based. Same stuff that the stars are made out of. You know, that kind of idea, this plasmic energy. I personally believe that there are two different things we're talking about here. These amoebic-like life forms that we're witnessing with this new telescope that we'll be discussing later.
Right, not the Glimmer Man stuff.
And then the Glimmer Man stuff is a humanoid technology. Could be using a similar kind of function or technology, but it's humanoid, I think. I mean, we'll get into more stories that explain different things, but this stuff goes back. I mean, the idea of invisibility technology has been around since ancient Greece, which I'm going to touch on really briefly.
Yeah, and when we come back, I would like to get into another theory, which is, I think, just as possible, or at least it relates interestingly to John's favorite topic, the Bigfoot phenomenon. There's some fascinating accounts in here.
It's kind of scary.
It's pretty spooky. Well, this is
these
an interesting book.
Eyes.
This is Where the Footprints End, High Strangeness and the Bigfoot Phenomenon, Volume 1, Folklore. But it is in-depth, really well done, really well researched by Joshua Cutchin and Timothy Renner. But
basically an encyclopedia of accounts, right?
Right. And also it ties in folklore. It also ties in theory.
It focuses on the kind of inexplicable
right.
sightings.
And so I figured when we were doing this episode, I was like, you know, I have this book. There has to be a section on cloaking because I've heard accounts of Bigfoot seemingly disappearing in a moment's notice. And of course there was. So when we get back, we are going to cover some interesting things. It's going to tie sort of all this stuff together. And I think may persuade some people that there is a connection with the Bigfoot phenomenon and also missing 411 in a chapter called Invisibility, Disappearing, and Cloaking.
It's all connected.
But yeah.
Bigfoot were created by the United States government anyway.
That's true.
Secret military force. And by the Sumerians. So time travel is involved. Anyways, we'll see you guys after the break.
All right.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and Leon starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
The last creature that I'm going to talk about that is specific to this Cajun country, to the bayou, living in the same neighborhood as the Ruguru, is the Palangua.
Alligator guy?
Yes, he's a half man, half alligator swamp boogeyman. Now, there are some origin stories. This is from Wikipedia.
So they're trying to explain the lore of the alligator man?
They're trying to explain how he was made.
From Wikipedia?
I guess. Yeah, this is what I found. Multiple stories of the creation of the Palangua. John, you want to read number one here?
It begins with a young couple during the 1960s. They drove off a bridge on a foggy night. Trapped in their car, they were attacked by alligators. One of the alligators was about to lay eggs. Hatched, a monster was born instead.
What?
I don't know how that works. I guess they ate the lady and it went. Her DNA went into the alligator.
Well, the man got excited and fertilized the eggs.
That was possible, yeah.
Fear boner.
Okay, totally possible. Next, John.
The beginning relates to chemicals being dropped into the Red River that drained and pooled around an alligator's nest of eggs, like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Just like that.
The chemicals, mutagen. The chemicals...
Thanks for the clarification.
Nice.
The chemicals were from a human egg harvesting clinic. This combination gave birth to the monster.
I love...
Ectoplasm.
Ectoplasm?
Different... Mutagen.
They're just saying words.
It's fun to say.
I feel like, where are these coming from? I don't know what these are listed in Wikipedia.
These
possible
are all
creation
like
stories.
Ridiculous. The beginning of science fiction
They're
stories.
They're like comic book origin stories.
Yeah.
They make less sense.
Where did these come from? Is Wikipedia?
Yeah, I don't know where they got them from.
I love them. They're great.
I made a funny.
Splinter. Classic scene.
I made a funny.
That was really good. I wasn't looking at you. It sounded just like Splinter. It was perfect.
It is you, Donatello.
Hello, good friends. We're back.
Welcome back.
Thanks for joining us on round 2.
Part 2.
The Glimmer Man.
Of the Glimmer Man, translucent entities and, you know, stuff.
Other invisible phenomenon.
Predator-like creatures. Secret technology. Clicking.
ASMR.
ASMR. Predator, the ASMR of the alien world.
What's next on the docket?
Ooh, I can go. It's real quick.
Are you doing your ancient Greece thing?
Yeah, so...
All right.
What?
I know.
John's like history.
Don't use keywords that sound boring to John.
Yeah, what?
It'll depress him.
Greek?
This is just really quick. Greek? Who's that?
Is that a man?
So Plato was a man. He wrote a book called The Republic, and I won't bore you, John, with all the...
Thank you.
...important historical notes and implications on human morality, but in this book... Plato's older brother discusses a legend, I guess you could call it. And this goes back to the argument of like, you know, some of the things that were referenced Plato when he talked about Atlantis. Was that was Plato or Socrates?
Yeah.
Plato, right?
Mm-hmm. Socrates?
Yeah.
Socrates? Socrates. Like, I think of soccer shirts.
You've heard that name before, right? You've heard that word.
Socrates.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
From Keanu Reeves and Bill and Ted's.
That's like, what I was thinking too.
The Socrates, dude.
That's where I learned about him. That's where I got all my history. Anyways, Plato, his older brothers, Plato, obviously a philosopher from ancient Greece, his older brother describes in book two of Plato's Republic, like I said, a legend, but this goes back to that idea that like some of these things that were understood at the time that we take now as allegory, like obviously it's used in the story as allegory. Like you mentioned earlier, what would you do if you could be invisible?
Right.
You know, where would you go? Well, it was used in the Republic to ask that question of humanity, to explore the ideas of justice. Would you be a just person if you could be invisible? Would you truly measure up? Exactly. So it's this classic
idea.
Where
would you go?
Where would I go?
Yeah. What would you want to find out?
I might keep that to myself so that when I do find ring of invisibility, you won't know where to find me. I'll be hiding.
I'd probably go do something political and find out information.
Yeah, dude, I would definitely go to Bohemian Grove. I'd definitely be there every summer.
Or some sort of Bilderberg meeting.
Bilderberg meetings, dude.
That would be fun.
I used to have ideas of how I would break in. Free cocktails and you get to learn about the masterminding of society.
Yeah.
I heard that at the Bilderberg meeting, you can't look them in the eye.
Who?
Yeah, as like a server.
Wait staff?
Yeah.
Oh, you can, yeah.
There have been people that have worked.
I think I have heard that.
Yeah, during those meetings. If you guys don't know about the Bilderberg, Google it.
I'm surprised we didn't talk about it during the secret societies.
I know.
The CFR.
We kind of jumped. I mean, there's a lot out there on different societies. We kind of jumped over it.
Trilateral Commission. There's a ton of those groups.
A lot of those come out of each other, right? Yeah. Like the CFR.
I'm sure they're the same people. They just had different meetings.
Right. Yeah, different. I mean, it's factions. You know, we know the full truth.
We do. I'm surprised we haven't been invited to a meeting yet.
Oh, I didn't tell you? I got an email this morning.
We're gonna need you to direct the show in a certain way.
Well, you know, actually, speaking of invisible entities, I was thinking about this last night, listening to some of these sounding like, I don't know, military type stuff. Sometimes when you're researching really late, you can freak yourself out about stuff. And I had some weird stuff, I won't go into it, happen. Just hearing noises, things being moved in our apartment. And last night, especially, this was happening. And just like a sound, like, what was that sound? Oh, then we recreate it by lifting up a piece of driftwood and setting
it down.
Like
the wooden camel.
Or the wooden camel figurine. Like, how did that move? I didn't see it move, but anyways, we hear these things. So anyways, I'm trying to go to bed. It's like 4 a.m. and I'm seeing like glimmer. I'm seeing this kind of swishy, translucent, almost like if you've ever tried DMT or something where things become like kind of shape and wavy. I was seeing this and I was like, okay, this is my eyes. I'm just tired, obviously. And then just like, this clicking sound in my bed. I swear to God.
What are you talking about?
Last night, after researching, before going to bed.
You think you're just manifesting this because you've been researching?
No, it was a plastic water bottle in my bed that I had.
Oh, that'll do
but
it.
But I didn't touch it. The Glimmer Man touched it or something. Something might have touched it.
Glimmer Man.
He's thirsty.
I kept seeing things. Eventually, I just got myself to go to sleep because I'm really brave and I wasn't too scared. But
with your brother next to you on your bunk beds.
He was below me. Oh. Thank you. We don't have a lot of space there, John.
I know.
It's small.
I've seen it.
It's a temporary situation. Anyway.
Temporary forever.
Temporary forever. That's our new twin, like, convenience
temporary
store.
Forever.
We sell, like, all things twins need.
Temporary forever.
I love it. Okay. Anyways, speaking of Plato's Republic, perfect tie-in, John. Thank you. Brings me right back. So I'll read this brief bit. This legend. And the idea that, like, some of these legends weren't just legends. I like that idea. They point out that this story, Hippocrates. What was the guy? Chris, Pat keeps calling you this because you're the father of lies. Father of history, father of lies.
Yeah.
Ancient Greece.
Herodotus.
Herodotus, yeah. So on our trip down, Chris likes to make up things a lot. And
I do.
Pat used to be very gullible. So Pat just refers to Chris as Herodocris now because Herodotus was like the father of history, but also the father of lies.
He had a lot of exaggeration allegedly in his historical accounts. But we do get the dog man from him.
Cynocephali, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
Anyways, so to my point, this story could have some basis in reality. We know that this king existed in this story. Did the ring of invisibility exist, is the question.
Tolkien.
This is going to sound very familiar. According to the tradition, Gyges was a shepherd in the service of the king of Lydia. There was a great storm and an earthquake made an opening in the earth at the place where he was feeding his flock. Amazed at the sight, he descended into the opening, where among other marvels, he beheld a hollow brazen horse, having doors, at which stooping and looking in saw a dead body of stature, as appeared to him, more than human, and having nothing on but a gold ring. This he took from the finger of the dead and reascended from the tomb.
Now the shepherds met together, according to custom, that they might send their monthly report about the flocks to the king. Into their assembly he came having the ring on his finger, and as he was sitting among them, he chanced to turn the collet of the ring inside his hand. Now the collet is where you would put a diamond or a gemstone, that kind of idea.
Oh, like the inset.
Or if there's like an emblem, you know, kind of a flat panel, that's the collet. So he turns it inside at this point. He chanced to turn the collet of the ring inside his hand, when instantly he became invisible to the rest of the company, and they began to speak of him as if he were no longer present. He was astonished at this, and again, touching the ring, he turned the collet outwards and reappeared. He made several trials of the ring, and always with the same result. When he turned the collet inwards, he became invisible. When outwards, he reappeared. Whereupon he contrived to be chosen one of the messengers who were sent to the court, where as soon as he arrived, he seduced the queen and with her help conspired against the king and slew him and took the kingdom. So that's the story of the king of Gyges, how he became, or Gyges, however you say it.
I like that story.
Yeah, but obviously this is where Tolkien gets his ring, right? One of the interesting things that stood out to me in the story is I came across a lot of these invisible entity stories. I know this is a big stretch. I'm not saying that they're all wearing these ancient, you know, Grecian rings of magic, but it reminds me of the scene in Alien when they find the progenitor. Is that what they're called?
Mm-hmm.
Is that the name of them? The big alien.
I don't remember.
The dead corpse. You know what I'm talking about? And the ship.
Doesn't sound like any radio signal I've heard.
Yeah. No, not progenitor. They have a name. I can't think of it.
Oh, man, it's killing me. Someone's going to write and hate me for it. Anyways, when they find him, and remember, and he's like this giant creature, like in this ship.
Yeah.
What's interesting about the story is, yeah, this large size. I've come across a lot of these stories about these invisible entities that are like anywhere between 7 to 10 feet tall. Like the story we had from Justin.
The space jockey, by the way.
Space jockey. Yeah, that was what it was called in there.
Right.
But in Prometheus, they had another
name.
Anyways, this idea that they're these large entities, that struck with me when I read this story.
Yeah, because
this
shepherd boy. Body of stature.
Yeah, he opens the doors to this bronze horse, and inside is this other descriptions rewrite it as saying he found a corpse with this gold ring, and the corpse was larger than that of a man. Well, what's larger than a man? A giant? A non-man?
A Bigfoot?
A predator? An invisible entity? Who knows? But it's just interesting. It points to something non-human, and we have all these stories of like red-haired giants, you know, in the Southwest, and I've heard stories about some of the native cultures, invisible entities in the same areas. It's interesting how all this stuff ties in together, and it's not a direct connection, but it's I think it's interesting to point out this idea of invisibility that's been around for so long, and the kind of weird connection with the magic of these giant, larger entities.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting too, because obviously the idea is that this is an allegory, a thought experiment to talk about the justice of humankind and what people would do when they're anonymous, you know, and that morality. But, you know, like Plato's Atlantis, there are a growing number of factions of folk who think that that is not an allegory and that there is legitimate historical evidence to show that there was an advanced civilization. You know, look at Graham Hancock's work. We've touched on that in advanced civilization episode.
Right, some kind of advanced source civilization that's why we see pyramids in all these other countries.
Again, I doubt it's a ancient Grecian Bigfoot wearing a magical ring that's running around. And
oh, like Enkidu that the Sumerians created through DNA technology.
I like that tie-in. I like the little bit
I
of
think
that.
I think it's interesting. And yeah, like I said, like, you know, it's allegory, but we can use real stories for allegory at the same time, metaphor. You
that's
know,
true.
You take an example of Gyges's ring. You can use these stories, and it doesn't mean that they're completely false,
right?
You know, especially when there are different references from their history. But I'm not arguing that that's the case. I just thought it was an interesting kind of connection.
Yeah, I like that. That was colorful.
Should we read another story?
We can. Let's do another story, and then I want to get into the Bigfoot tie-in, and then we can move on.
Okay, so we got a couple fun ones here, John. This one's kind of fun. I think you should read it if you don't mind, in a voice, if you would. So this story comes from Phantoms and Monsters. It's one I've come across. It just feels like, you know, when you read this story sometimes, and I don't want to like cast aspersions on the fellow who sent this in. But, you know, sometimes it's just written like this guy kind of has this sort of, you know, air about himself, like he's taking care of business kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Like a tough guy?
Yeah.
What story is this?
This story is called The Patroller, and you'll see why I titled it that. But this is originally from Phantoms and Monsters. We'll have it linked in the show notes.
I live in a very rural stretch of western Washington state. Here's my story. It began in late July when I was forced to make semi-regular patrols around the property on which I live. It's heavily wooded, very hilly,
and wet with a creek and swamp at the bottom. When I was made aware of local drug addicts attempting incursions upon the property. As most of you likely know, drug addicts have a natural tendency towards violence, especially the breed we have in my neck of the woods. I began carrying a rifle as I made my patrols because, as the old adage goes, better safe than sorry. Very quickly, I found their tracks at the bottom of the hill, and I even managed to claim a gas can as a kind of war trophy. That led me to believe they may be aiming to perform illegal logging on the property, which intensified my patrols. Soon after, I ran into a rather unsettling shape in the forest. I was on another patrol, standard, routine procedure, when I passed an ancient cedar tree. I'd been past it a million times, but I suddenly felt as though I should take a seat underneath it and rest a while. I sat under the tree's boughs and set my rifle and day pack at my side. I sat in the silence and stillness for a while, taking in all the sounds the woods have to offer. I almost felt as though I had entered the same state of zen I had the year previously, kneeling beside a natural spring after a heavy rain. All was well, the world was fine, and everything would be okay. I felt wonderful. I opened my eyes and rolled my head to my right to look out into a grove of alder trees. Glancing upwards, I saw a humanoid shape. It was roughly 15 feet up in the air and had the distinct shape of a human head, neck, and shoulders, but no discernible bottom. It seemed to just fade away. The only way I can describe it is similar to the Predator films, in which the titular creature uses a cloaking device. It was very, very similar to the device. At its edges, it seemed reality was embossed in that shape. I sat and stared at it for probably 3 to 5 seconds before an overwhelming feeling of dread and anxiety overtook me. I should add that I'm very tough to genuinely scare. I've been through a great many nasty situations that don't bear mentioning, and suffice to say, this shook me to my very core. I was almost petrified, scared out of my mind of what would happen if I dare move. I finally mustered the strength to remove my glasses and wipe them on my shirt, and redonning them, I could see the shape was still there. The dread grew in intensity, tenfold, every few seconds, and my naturally calm, naturally awesome mind took hold again. My naturally calm, rational mind took hold again. I began counting down in my head. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. When I reached 0, I thrust an arm under my rucksack's shoulder strap, grabbed my rifle, and sprinted home, saying a quick prayer as I ran. I haven't encountered it since, but believe me, there's more to this story.
So he goes on to describe, and he includes pictures, and I'll link this in the show notes.
Does he take a picture of the gasoline can he found? This war trophy?
So he finds things on his property where a hole that was dug, where he supposedly saw the creature that he thinks the creature dug it in like an L shape. I mean, nothing that really proves anything. It's just kind of, I mean, it's an interesting story. I love the way that he writes.
I want to know what drug addicts are also legally logging.
Illegally logging? Yeah. Well, you can sell some timber.
They do go
hand
in hand.
That's true. Some areas you're not stealing copper wire, you're stealing timber.
Those are like the rugged drug addicts, yeah. The ones that like really work hard for their money.
Yeah. I like he was like, as most of you know, most drug addicts are extremely violent.
His writing style is interesting. It just reminds me of like an old school, I don't know, like a wildernessman's journal. / Marine who is patrolling his own home and land.
Interesting. And where was this?
Washington State. And that's one of the reasons I included it, because this is Western Washington.
I feel like there would be some definitely invisible creatures up there.
That's where I'd put them, for sure.
A big hunk of them come from the Pacific Northwest.
That's one of the reasons I include this story, other than it's kind of entertaining. But in this area, Western Washington State, that's where a lot of the striking number of these counts come from. So are they experiencing the same thing? Are these the same kind of tests? And the thing about the trees, these things live in the trees, or that's where they
spend a lot of time up there.
Another thing, too, like if it is human, it seems to be very natural for them to reside or hide in treetops. That seems like a very common thing where people witness them. So I don't know if it's a different kind of thing, if there are human
type secret technology going on experience, but then maybe there's a separate thing that's in the trees that is more mammalian, animal.
Well, do you mind if I jump in real quick? Because it ties right into what you're talking about with that sound in the trees. So this comes from the book I had mentioned earlier, Where the Footsteps End, and we'll have that linked in the show notes. And this comes from the section Invisibility, Disappearing, and Cloaking in regards to the Bigfoot phenomenon. The entire notion of invisible Bigfoot presents a logical puzzle. How can something unseen shuffling through the forest be declared Bigfoot if it is invisible? So this is going to go into, obviously, the Bigfoot theory when it comes to this sort of these cloaking entities in the woods. They go on to sort of connect common Bigfoot traits with these encounters and link it. But he continues on and says, crunching leaves are quiet compared to how witnesses typically describe the sound of invisible entities in the forest. Common comparisons are made to trains, herds of horses, or heavy machinery. In one account, Kentucky fishermen trying to bring their boat ashore were frightened away multiple times by thrashing, crashing, and breaking in the forest. Quote, like a herd of elephants, which reminds me of that Duncan story.
Justin
that invisible
story.
Commotion going on, the shaking in the branches sounded like it was either one giant, massive, invisible creature or a many, you know, medium-sized
apes or something.
Right.
Yeah.
It continues. Witnesses report sounds like a bulldozer crashing through the forest, crushing and smashing trees in a straight line until suddenly it stops. And then there is nothing, no further sound.
It's so funny. It sounds just like that smoke monster in Lost. You hear the sound of something coming.
Right.
That's fiction.
But
there's always touchstones in fiction. Sorry.
So no further sound, wrote Franzoni. Quote, those who are brave or insane enough to investigate the place where the sound stopped will find nothing. One especially vexing encounter occurred on September 3rd, 2015, in rural Maine. David Chase and three friends were on the rim of a gully when they observed several limbs moving as though apes were braciating upon them.
It was the killer apes. The gorilla.
The galeas.
City of Zinj.
But again, that same thing. And in Chase's own words, quote, the largest one I estimated to be the size of a small gorilla or a big chimpanzee, maybe a couple hundred pounds. We couldn't see them. We couldn't hear any sounds like breathing or vocalization. We didn't smell any odors associated with them. It's like they were there and not there at the same time. We only knew them from the movements they were making. Their weight on the branches was very physical. They would jump down from above or jump from one area a few feet to the right or left, and the branches would react accordingly. There were smaller ones whose apparent size and movements reminded me of a small monkey's shaking the branches. An image of a marmoset is what my brain came up with when I saw this movement.
Okay, yeah, so that's a Bigfoot book, but I don't think those are big feet.
Right. Again, like
Bigfoots.
There's a lot of elements that don't quite subscribe to like the smell. Like you would think you would smell that typical thing. But it's interesting because David Pilates has a quote, missing 4-in-1. And you know, this is right in the missing 4-in-1 spectrum. Invisible things
in the woods.
Explain a lot. So Pilates says, in many sightings reports I have read and personally investigated, it is fairly common for people to claim that Bigfoot sometimes completely disappears. Some claim that they are following tracks and they suddenly stop, or they see the creature, start tracking it again, and then it is gone. There are countless examples of Bigfoot explicitly disappearing in front of witnesses' own very eyes. John, will you just read these three quick little schnapps here?
According to the July 16th, 1918 Seattle Times, mountain devils attacked a prospector's cabin near Mount St. Helens, Washington. The devils were said to be members of a local race, intermediate between men and animals, with magical powers and the ability to make themselves invisible. In 1926, a group of teens near Kolomenskoye, Russia, happened upon a tall, hairy creature stealing apples from an orchard. As they approached the beast, it vanished into thin air. Larry Abbott and two others were investigating. Should I have split these out to like let people know that they're separate stories?
You don't have to, but...
Okay. This is the third one. Larry Abbott and two others were investigating a sound outside their Point Isabel, Ohio farmhouse in 1968.
Did you hear that, Larry?
When they spotted a 10-foot tall, 4-foot wide, beige hairy creature with glowing eyes. Larry claimed the monster put them in a momentary trance, after which a rifle was fetched. They shot the creature 3 times before it was enveloped in a white mist and disappeared.
Freudian fog. Okay, so the initial story that Dave Pilatus brought to light, at least in one of his books.
This is my next spot.
Oh, you're going to talk about
that
next?
Yeah, it's actually right here.
Okay, yeah, so it connects to Ohio again.
Yeah, Ohio, there's so many of these accounts in Ohio, which is cool.
It's just fascinating when our friend sent that story in with his account, that it was, you know, he lives nearby in Ohio, and it's the same giant invisible creature, and he knows nothing about this stuff. He's never seen or heard any David Politis stories or, you know, anything about this. It's just weird.
Yeah.
It's kind of corroboration. Gosh darn it.
And it's all over the world. I like this one, and this is one I like to look into in the future because it is a very large sighting as far as like a lot of people being there to witness. On August 11th, 1979, several students in Lumay Perak, Malaysia, encountered a trio of 10-foot-tall hairy figures with red eyes. They allegedly blinked out of existence, and ensuing panic caused a temporary school closure. This happened at a school. I always love those school stories.
Weird. It's weird when this caused school closures, like that Australian UFO sighting.
Exactly. There's so many UFO things. And again, UFOs tied to Bigfoot, tied to cloaking now. And Jared, this is going to tie right into the Maccabee account that you mentioned earlier, which is something we discussed on our show before. And this is where it gets into directly relating to what we're talking about today as far as like the glimmer, the cloaking, the clicking sounds. So they continue. In addition to fully disappearing, witnesses report Bigfoot cloaking, taking on a not quite invisible appearance, pixelating the surrounding environment, which is a word that should sound familiar looking into this stuff. This is frequently compared to the visual effects used in the 1987 science fiction action film Predator.
You're one ugly motherfucker.
Here are some examples. In 1972, in Indiana, a series of events soon to become infamous begin with a chicken massacre at Rochdale Farm. A large ape-like creature is spotted for 2 weeks thereafter, but never leaves tracks, is never heard running through bushes, and sometimes appears as though, quote, you could see through it. Other anomalies include UFOs and poltergeist activity. And I think you have a Skinwalker Ranch story up next, which relates to that. In 1995, Washington, a strange, quote, out-of-focus creature appears to Evan Canoose near Vancouver. He vaguely discerns a red-orange orangutan-like figure with a black face standing over 6 feet tall. Canoose uneasily departs in his car. 2000, Oregon. Cousins see a hulking, hairy, stinking, quote, Neanderthal in the Coast Range Mountains, which vanish before them. The creature begins shimmering like, quote, heat rising from the ground.
Oh, yeah, I hear that a lot.
Sound familiar? In, quote, blurry, wavy lines before fully disappearing. And this is the last account, the one that kind of set this whole thing off, I think. 2010, Ohio. Jan Maccabee, wife of optical physicist and ufologist Bruce Maccabee, is bow hunting when the woods suddenly become deathly silent. Disconcerted, Maccabee becomes, quote, aware that a weird visual effect is moving from right to left across her vision, perhaps 15 to 20 feet away. She describes the shape, quote, as if looking through saran wrap. Maccabee rubs her eyes and, still perceiving the apparition, snaps a photo in its direction. The resulting image shows a strange shimmer, as well as, quote, a collection of elongated reflections from a filamentary surface, such as one might find in a photo of hair, according to Bruce. Perhaps significantly, an entire marching band observed a UFO during rehearsal that very same evening, mere miles away. That should sound familiar because we covered that on the Missing 401 episode. And they kind of sum it up by saying, these abilities may be neither natural nor supernatural, but rather technological. Some evidence suggests, this is, I think, kind of funny, Bigfoot may utilize advanced machinery to disappear, an idea inevitably connecting sightings to UFO lore. As addressed in Chapter 6, Bigfoot are sometimes spotted wearing glowing belts or belts with buttons, leading some researchers to wonder if these are not simple clothing, but rather technology, like your ring, Jer. Bigfoot are also seen with small boxes, which might also play a role in cloaking. In 1900, a wild man in Pennsylvania was seen carrying, quote, a curious package in his hand.
I've heard that.
And butting his head against trees. When pursued, he disappeared, quote, like magic. Perhaps given Moorhead's observation of Bigfoot phasing into trees, this wild man's technology was malfunctioning. During a series of cattle mutilations and UFO sightings in Montana in 1976, a teenager spotted two Bigfoot crossing a field, one of which carried an object, quote, about the size of a bale of hay. when the larger of the two handed the object to its partner and began walking towards the witnesses, he ran downstairs to alert his family. The creatures had disappeared, but left behind three-toed footprints. These solutions are cryptozoological research tests. Flesh and bone advocates favor infrasound and mimicry. Metaphysically minded researchers sympathize with the notion Bigfoot is a ghost. Armchair quantum theorists and ufologists occupy the center. So I thought it was interesting to bring that sort of research into this. You can't really talk about the cloaking in the woods without bringing in some of those radical Bigfoot stories.
Now you've introduced this whole other dangerous idea of the trans-dimensional belted Bigfoot
right,
that transmutes through trees,
mm-hmm.
which is weird because I want to do a Missing 411 episode on the fairy angle.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where there are stories like that where there'll be people going into the woods disappearing, but there's blood found on the trees, almost like they've been pushed through the trees, like it's some sort of like transient point.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff, man.
I mean, who knows, but intriguing, I think.
Yeah. I think that there's a number of things that could explain this and, you know, none of it normal, in my opinion.
Right. And again, not a one thing, not a one phenomenon, I don't
right,
think.
Right, right. All right, so there's one last story I want to do. This one's kind of funny, actually. John, you up for reading one more? It's called Skinwalker Ranch Hippie Attack. What I titled it. This comes from the book by Colm A. Kelleher and George Knapp titled Hunt for the Skinwalker.
Yeah, we covered this in our Skinwalker episode.
Right, but this story I don't think we have. It's pretty great. So the setup here is that Skinwalker Ranch, also known as Sherman Ranch, is a property located approximately 512 acres southeast of Ballard, Utah, and it's reputed to be the site of paranormal and UFO-related activities, as we've covered in the past. In June 1996, a man showed up at the ranch telling the rancher that he had heard about the paranormal activities on the property, and he insisted that he wanted to meditate on the property, as you would.
The three of them piled into Tom's diesel truck and headed down into the ranch. After about a mile, the stranger announced that he would like to meditate here, near a small pasture surrounded by trees.
This is perfect, man.
The stranger walked into the middle of the open ground, about 100 yards from the tree line. Tom walked with him a short distance and then stood watching. He glanced back at his still grinning son, who had elected to stay by the truck. Tom was about 30 yards from the stranger, who had closed his eyes and in a faintly religious gesture had spread both his arms out. Tom was amused. Silence reigned and the late afternoon sun cast a beautiful light on the scene. This tall blonde man standing silently in the middle of the pasture, with his eyes closed and his arms raised, much like the pose struck by saints and angels in religious paintings. In the distance, Tom heard the sudden chime of a cowbell. He was puzzled. None of his animals had cowbells. The sound seemed to be coming from deep within the trees. There it was again, nearer this time. The stranger seemed not to have heard it. Tad made a gesture of puzzlement. Tom looked at the trees and thought he could see a faint blur. Something was moving very quickly between the trees. Tom could not make out the shape, but he knew it was big. Was that the source of the cowbell sound? He watched carefully as the shape moved like a fast blur from tree to tree. It was almost as if it was circling. Tom felt uneasy. Without warning, something broke from the tree line and moved swiftly toward the meditating man. Tom blinked. He still couldn't see what it was, even though it was broad daylight. It was blurred, as if it was hidden in the middle of heat distortion, and it was covering ground at an enormous speed. Gorman realized that this chimera was making a beeline for the blissful meditator, who was completely unaware of what was rapidly bearing down on him. Tom was about to yell a warning, but it was too late. The shimmering, wraith-like huge thing had stopped just inches from the meditator, as it let out a deep-throated animal roar that echoed around the ranch. The roar sounded half like a bear, half like a lion. Tom froze. The stranger leaped back about 10 feet and fell down. He began screaming. As fast as it had approached, the shimmering, almost invisible creature departed for the tree line at top speed. Tom's sharp eyes could make out only a blur of dancing, flickering, wavy lines, like pixelated blocks. Within seconds, the creature had vanished into the trees. Sometime later, as Tom and Tad were watching the movie Predator, in which Arnold Schwarzenegger and Jesse Ventura battle an alien life form in a jungle in Central America. They let out a loud yell when they first saw the shimmering creature. That's what we saw! They yelled in unison to the astonished family. The predator in the movie seemed to actually encapsulate the degree of camouflage of what they had seen. Tom calculated that the thing they saw was moving at between 50 and 60 miles per hour when it broke cover from the trees. 50 to 60
that's
miles
insane.
Per hour, yeah.
For a humanoid thing? Like raptor speed.
That's like leopard speed.
And raptor. But for two legs. We don't know animals.
That'd be terrifying.
Well, we don't know how many legs it had. We never saw it. Oh, that's true. That's true. I guess it could have been a cloaked
just
monster.
Sounded, it was massive.
Four-legged monster.
Sounded like a combination of a bear and a lion.
Oh, man. Yeah, Skinwalker Ranch, what a cool thing. And if you guys want to hear our episode and you haven't on Skinwalker Ranch, that was a lot of fun. Very fascinating. And that was season one, episode 13.
Okay.
Check it out.
Oh, an early one.
Yeah, that's an early.
Yeah.
Early bird.
Some old school belief hole there. Yeah, I love that story. I just love imagining
a lot of cool visuals in that one.
I picture a combination of David Wilcock and Stephen Greer going out there to meditate in this cornfield and just like this beast just runs at him.
That's funny.
That's pretty fun.
I dropped off at the end of that. Where's the, was the hippie okay?
He was eaten.
Oh, really?
He was eaten. Excreted into a man-sized turd.
Now you're lying.
He
was eaten. He was bitten. He was eaten.
Esteban was eaten. Esteban was bitten. Eaten. Is he dead? Yes, the boy was eaten. He was swallowed whole. No! Killed! Check the scanning monitor!
Phil Murray. So good. Life Aquatic. Recommendation.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he's fine. He just knocked him over.
Oh, okay.
Well, there are some attacks apparently with this thing. But I haven't found any yet that have actually hurt anyone.
And again, obviously
but then would you know?
Obviously not all the same thing. Some of these are giant sorts of things in the forest. Some of these are bipedal,
right?
Large.
Could be the same technology or similar kind of function,
right?
Weirdly, I've seen a lot of people post on these stories and stuff like, I believe this is what's behind all of Missing 411, which that doesn't really make sense to me. This would I could see it explaining some stuff, but unless they're taking it somewhere into another world, like the fairy idea, right?
Yeah.
The fae folk transportation, that kind of thing, you'd find bodies, you know, if these things could kill it or kill, you know, take someone away, but they're still just there unless there's some other place that they're going.
Right.
You know? But more needs to be explored on this story. So as far as the, possible technologies, like kind of one of the things I wanted to wrap up with here is the technology that we have now, for cloaking.
Pretty incredible. And we're going to link a video.
And this is just like you said earlier, John, this is just what they're showing us. You know, imagine what they actually have if you believe that there is, like we do, advanced technology that they're obviously not going to share with everybody as soon as they get it. They being, you know, covert
groups. High-level government
right.
military organizations.
Well, the idea of cloaking in ufology, like UFO sightings, it's been around forever. Like there's so many examples of that. Why, to me, it doesn't seem that much of a stretch to apply that to something smaller, something that's moving that might be alive.
Right.
Again, is it extraterrestrial? Is it interdimensional? Is it cryptid related? Is it just mankind's dark projects, you know, that are ahead of the curve?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you have a video?
I do, yeah. I've got a video here, guys. It's really short. It's just one example. Christy, I know you have a couple examples. This is just one quick example of a fella down in, it's a Canadian camouflage company called Hyperstealth Biotechnology. And I think the CEO actually developed this. Guy Kramer, primarily for military purposes, to conceal agents and equipment such as tanks and jets in the field. As well as making objects close to invisible to the naked eye, the material also conceals them from infrared and ultraviolet imagers. Unlike traditional camouflage materials, which are limited to specific conditions such as forests, deserts, according to Kramer, this invisibility cloak works in any environment or season at any time of day.
Awesome, I want
it. So here's, this will be in the show notes, guys.
Yeah, if you want to follow along, go to beliefful.com and click on the latest episode and you'll see it linked in the show notes. You can watch
it. Sorry, we can't implant the video in your brain. You'll have to actually go and watch it.
Just click the link in this. If you're watching this on YouTube, click the link in the video description, or if you're on a podcast, click the link. It'll take you to our episode page where you can get all the show notes, this included. Okie dokie. So here we go, Key.
Ready? 3, 2, 1, 0. Hyperstealth.
Hyperstealth.
So this is the CEO talking here.
when he starts talking.
I'm Guy Kramer, president and CEO of Hyperstealth Biotechnology Corporation. And in 2010, I figured out invisibility.
Looks Quantum so stealth happy is that a patent pending
light bending material that works by bending the light so that only the background is visible and a target, such as a person, is removed from view when behind this material.
Pretty astounding.
Boom, boom.
That's it?
Yep, for that one. Yeah, that was just a really quick example. Obviously, if you're wearing a suit.
I mean, that's. Yeah, I guess it's not very impressive unless, because I mean, it's just all you see is like a sheet there thing.
Yeah, all you see is him going behind this, you know, sheet. If you were looking at it, you didn't know that it was an invisibility demonstration. You're like, oh, there's like a semi-opaque piece of plastic.
Right. You know what I mean? But you wouldn't necessarily know that. I mean, you know what I mean?
That's what it looks like to your brain.
Not really. I mean, like I've seen glass that looks like that.
Let's explain to the listeners who can't see the video.
Yeah, that's true.
Those of you who can't see, essentially the CEO or the creator walks behind this piece of material, like a sheet essentially, that you can mostly see through. It's a little blurry.
Like foggy glass, kind of.
Like foggy glass. And when he walks through, he pretty much completely disappears. Maybe there's a slight color, maybe a shade.
It would have been more impressive if there was, like, because it's just a white wall. If it had like some sort of like identifying...
Oh, you didn't see the wall. It has patterns on the wall. There's green and wood squares. Trim. There's trim and squares and stuff.
I didn't see that.
Like the wood border and the paint. Okay. Like that's all really there behind it.
You still see like a shadowy type thing.
Kind of see a slight. You could see how to distance you would. Yeah, this to me doesn't explain what we're seeing, obviously. It doesn't match the description.
Yeah,
to
it's
me.
Definitely. It's pretty cool. It's not. I think it'd be way more impressive if it was like on him or something.
Well, that's the thing.
It's still cool though.
Right. For the purposes of this, you could just hold up a blanket and be like, hey, you can't see me. I'm behind this blanket. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, because it doesn't seem functional in the sense that like you can't move around with it. Of course, you could put this in the field, put it in front of a tank and you wouldn't see the tank. And I think it's also invisible to infrared and other technologies. So I get the military application for it. It would just be kind of like blurry in that
spot.
You'd
have to see it in context with something more than this.
Right. Not a sad creator of it in a hotel. If you guys are interested, there is, John, what you're talking about, an actual invisible cloak.
Play the Fell from China. You got that one?
It's the top link there.
Now, some of this technology from this link, second link we'll have in the show notes. What is the title of it, Chris?
YouTube, it's right under the heading advanced.
Real invisibility cloak?
Yeah. And the coolest one, I think, the guy, they explain who he is at the end. He's some Chinese general or something that claimed to invent invisible cloak. And it looks astoundingly incredible if it is real. It looks pretty real. Like if it's a visual effect, it's definitely professionally done. The argument is like he hasn't proved that it exists, but also they haven't disproved that he has it since it's China.
Yeah, it's kind of like absence of evidence is an evidence of absence.
I mean, that is an invisibility cloak if it's real.
Yeah, if that's real, that's amazing.
And we'll have this linked in the show notes for sure. You guys can check this out.
You think it's real?
I don't know. It's his word. There's not really a way to prove or disprove. No one's proven conclusively that it's a visual effect.
I mean, it looks, it's very well done if it's an effect, because it's hard, that kind of sheet movement. It definitely could be professionally done.
That second one's real.
Definitely should check that out though.
That'll be in the show notes, guys, called Real Invisibility Cloak. It's got a bunch of different ones in this video, but we'll timestamp it so it's at the point where we're talking
right.
about.
I'll also have some articles linked that break down the different sorts of cloaking technology we're working towards and the different techniques they're using to get there. Because again, it's, you know, healthy competition. So you got all these different people and they're trying to come up with invisibility in different ways.
Right. And of course, we already have it. That's my opinion.
Yeah.
I mean, for commercial purposes.
Right.
And what is the world going to look like in 10 years?
It'll be invisible.
I mean, just think about all the other technologies like deep fakes and...
Oh, yeah.
Like, it'll be so far advanced at that point. Like, I just can't even imagine where we're going to be in 10 years.
It just feels like it's going to get to a point where it just stops and
yeah,
resets.
It just feels like... Yeah, like, it feels like at some point in the near future,
technology.
We're not going to be able to go any further.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not, but
take it back to Plato. Maybe we'll just be like Atlantis. We'll get too big for our britches.
Yeah, I feel like right now we're Tower of Babel, sort of.
About to get knocked down.
We're getting close, but like something's going to come
and
just
you know,
knock us all down.
It's unfortunate because we talk about this a lot, but the advancement of technology is incredible, but we never stop to look at the progress and go, well, should we slow down? Should we figure this out
should
before
we
do it?
Should we just get our bearings?
Right.
Right now we are struggling as a human race to just
exist
because we're so, I feel like social media and the internet is breaking us. Psychologically
and regular media,
and no one's
the
stopping
news.
No adults are like, we need to just take 5 years to just integrate everything we've done, let our children integrate, assimilate before we just continue down this nonstop AI trek into
technology
oblivion.
Technology seems to have a get out of jail free card when it comes to looking at it before moving forward.
We prioritize technological growth over spiritual and mental
everything.
Growth.
Yeah.
You know, like psychological growth.
Protection.
Yeah, like we don't do it in a balanced way.
Even health.
It's just not the way our society is designed.
I don't think we're able to process it this fast.
Of course not.
Terrence McKenna.
Yeah.
Time Wave Zero.
Infinite novelty.
Exactly. And there's so much coming at us all the time. There's no way for us, can't be expected to know how an iPhone works or how, really understand the implications of all this stuff. We're just kind of using it.
It's fracturing us as a species right now. It's like creating like a schizophrenic population because of social media
now. It definitely feels that way. And it's not just, I mean, it's media too.
Yeah.
Like
it's
obviously.
It's just so like intense and in our faces and in our fingertips.
Yeah.
Like 24 hours a day. Most people are, I'm not saying everyone, there are some balanced people like us.
Like
but,
us.
But there's a lot of people that are very, very unable to deal with the intensity of it and are having meltdowns right now. They're too far down a rabbit hole and they just can't deal with
too
reality.
Invested. I've got a lot invested in this ride. Look at my furrows of worry, my big bank accounts.
Right.
Oh, Bill Hicks.
Yeah, the ability to put things down. It's just like, I don't listen nearly as many podcasts these days, mostly because we do one and researching, I do still listen to like my favorite ones, but I used to listen to podcasts all day long. And now, like, I just want to drive through a backcountry road and roll the window down and just get a little bit of peace. And then I realize, like, I'm having thoughts. I'm having spontaneous.
It lasts for about 8 minutes.
Right. Until I get lonely and put on a podcast or a song.
You don't want to think your own thoughts.
You're like, God?
Are you there?
What am I? We used to talk all the time. But it's important to consider like where we're headed. Is there a way to transition? I mean, at least as an individual, because obviously.
Yeah, we can't do it on a collective level at this point anymore. You got to take your sanity into your own hands.
Yeah. So you go out in the woods, you take a breath, you turn off your phone.
Put on your invisibility cloak.
Yes. Watch out for the invisible.
Don't creep yourself out too much.
Invisible monsters out there. Keep an eye out.
Yeah. You just got to, be respectful in the woods and, have reverence.
Yeah.
Respect and appreciation for all that is around you.
That's true.
We have a stinger, right, John?
We do. Jeremiah Ralphs.
Right.
Oh, Jeremiah.
And there's a part in the song about having two daughters, and I took it as that he's raising them right now, but that may not be true. They may be grown. I don't know. But in the song, it's like, it's geared towards.
Well, he raised them at some point.
Could be a flashback.
Yeah. And it's kind of sentimental. It turned out to be more emotive.
Uh-huh.
So.
Let's just hear it. Let's see. Let's hear it. Just throw in some fireworks at the end.
Jeremiah Ralphs, he's a hardworking man. He's raising up two daughters the best he can.
Oh.
He loves the paranormal and conspiracy. And he loves the outdoors where he knows he's meant to be.
Amen.
Jeremiah, 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 Jeremiah Ralphs. Jeremiah, 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 he's somebody that counts. Jeremiah, 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 Jeremiah Ralphs. Jeremiah, 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 believe who's given a shout.
Nice, man. He is somebody that counts.
He is somebody
that's
that
great.
Counts.
That's a great line. Thank you, Jeremiah.
Little bright lights action.
Kinda. Yeah, I like that, man. That was good. Thank you, Jeremiah.
Yeah, thanks. And I hope that you are raising your daughters. If not, you did a good job, I'm sure.
Yes. When you did raise them.
Yes.
Yeah, so thanks to all our new patrons.
Yes, thank you guys so much. You definitely keep the whole moving forward. Everything we make right now just goes back into growing the show.
Yeah, keeping it going. So thank you guys.
Yeah, sign up and you get exclusive full episodes on our expansion.
What's this one going to be about?
This one's going to be fun. So on our way back from Texas, Jeremy and I swung through New Orleans.
The Big Easy.
And we were there for a couple days, just couldn't leave because it was so crazy awesome and mysterious. So that why not do, I've been wanting to do stuff on Marie Laveau, and there's some famously haunted houses in that area. Just all kinds of lore. You got the Rougarou. So we thought we'd just do a fun expansion episode where we just get into all kinds of New Orleans madness.
The dark magical lore behind the city of New Orleans, the Big Easy. It's a lot of cool stuff there.
So head over to beliefhold.com and click the Patreon button.
Amen.
And sign up.
Yeah.
All right. So here is our patrons from September, I believe. I guess the end of August through September. Riley Ray, thank you.
Ashley Marcoux, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Claudia Cantu.
Yay.
Quentin Turk. Dustin. Jeremy Littleton.
Oh, yeah.
Faith Hildinger.
Hmm.
Darren Thompson.
Okay, my turn?
Yeah.
Thank you to Charles Balzotti. Patrick Michael Jordan. What an awesome name. Megan Clayton.
Megan.
Tyler.
Tyler.
Gregory Fletcher.
Fletcher, thank you. I've
never seen Fletcher. Meet Fletch.
Oh, yeah.
J.J. Swift.
Fast. That's fast.
Very quick. M. McMullen.
What?
Brittany.
Yay, yay.
All right. Also, thank you to Kevin Grindstaff.
Grindstaff.
What a name. Is that a wizard?
Give me that name. I want that name.
Ada M. McGee.
Mr. McGee. Mrs. McGee.
Miss.
Miss McGee.
We don't know. She's getting married.
That's true.
Charles Alden.
Charles.
Hey, buddy.
Michael Hendricks.
I'm
sure he gets it all the time.
The guy from Silicon Valley?
I'm sure he doesn't. Oh, yes, he does.
And finally, Hannah Whitwell. Thank you.
Hannah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Hannah. Thank you guys so much for supporting us. It means a whole great deal to us. It
really
keeps us going.
You guys are awesome.
You are super duper.
And if you haven't found the ability or time to sign up as an expansion member yet, feel free, if you want to help out, give us a review, share with your friends.
Share, yeah, definitely. If you're on YouTube, give it a thumbs up, share it. We're going to start trying to grow that channel more. So anything you can do to just pass the show along, if you think someone might like it, we really, really appreciate
that. Spread the word.
Yeah, for sure, guys. All right. Well, should we just exit into the wilderness?
Let's just end it. Sometimes it's just the end.
You know, you just vanish like a glimmer man.
Like Steven Seagal.
You gotta ruin it.
I said it again.
Every time.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.